As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome to the Andy Staples Show. We continue realignment palooza because it's still going on. No signs of stopping. We don't know where this is headed. It's a careening freight train off the tracks. We got to talk about it. And I've got David Ubben here. I've got Max Olson here. David Ubben, the host of Football and Grits, our SEC podcast. Max Olson, one of the hosts of One True Podcast, our Big 12 podcast. They're not going to fight it out. There's nothing to fight about. It's over. Divorce has been applied for. The next marriage has been applied for. The marriage certificate, they've gone to the courthouse and they're waiting for the justice of the peace to come back to them. But as we're recording this, it is Tuesday. The Oklahoma and Texas have told the Big 12 they are not going to renew the grant of rights. They have formally applied for membership to the SEC. I don't know if there's an application process, but they've said, hey, we want in. And now we've got to wait. Not long. The SEC presidents meet Thursday. 11 of 14 votes gets them in. And Friday, you got a Board of Regents meeting at Texas about conference affiliation. So just nice and tidy. But David, is this as fast as you thought it would happen when you heard about this last week? Or did you figure this was going to drag out a little bit longer?
Well, considering our experience 10 years ago, I was skeptical with our friend Brent Zorneman saying in the initial report, which props to Brent, by the way, that it was going to be done in a matter of weeks. I'd be lying if I said I didn't roll my eyes at that. But here we are, and just to like a lot of bills in the U.S. government situation, lest we get any drama left, these votes don't happen unless you have the votes. So let's not wait for some 11th hour drama because this doesn't happen unless it's already happened.
Andy, I remember last week, I wonder what night this, I guess probably maybe Thursday night last week, where we got on the phone late at night and I called you and I said, you know, the take from the Big 12 side is, this is not going to happen in the next few weeks. This is not very far along. And I just remember you. I mean, we were on the phone, but it was as if you were laughing in my face, basically.
Yeah, I had talked to some folks in the SEC that day, so I kind of knew where things were headed. And yeah, it definitely, this is as fast, though. I mean, last time it did not go nearly as fast. I went back and looked at all of the timeline stuff. Like 2011, when Texas A&M left the Big 12 for the SEC, we knew it was coming. It took about 2 months from the initial report to the SEC saying they're in. There was a date where the SEC was going to say you're in, and then Baylor, that was when Ken Starr left a voicemail for Mike Slive threatening to sue, and then it took another 2 weeks before that happened. So, I mean, this seems a little more buttoned up than we expected. Texas A&M, they had a Board of Regents meeting Monday, which is essentially they went to executive session. They came out of executive session. They're like, we're going to come back Wednesday and talk about this some more. So there is a scheduled Board of Regents meeting for Texas A&M. From what I understand, they would just like to get to the bottom of when all this started. Why didn't enough people at Texas A&M know? I'm sure that's something the SEC would not appreciate being aired publicly. So I'm guessing a ton more executive session on Wednesday.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd say that's probably a safe bet.
I think I just think it's exciting that Texas and OU are going to have these Board of Regents meetings, because I think it's time to loop those guys in. You know, I think it's time for them to talk about this. And you know, they should get to weigh in on this before such a big decision is made.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, you'd expect the guys who run the university to drive it and have some sort of, you know, say in this.
No doubt.
Been doing this the entire time.
And I will say, listen, there's not a lot that can satisfy our Aggie listeners. It's been a rough week. I understand it has not been fantastic. This is not what you'd like to see. But can I offer a silver lining to our Aggie listeners?
Yeah, maybe? Go for it.
As funny as the concept of Texas joining the SEC is, and the sort of gnashing of teeth, for all the last decade of hearing Texas fans shrug off the SEC superiority, laugh at the Aggies, the first time Texas fans chant SEC, I imagine, will be such a satisfying moment for the Aggies to essentially watch the Longhorns swallow their decades
it's
of pride. So,
yeah.
So
it's essentially them
moment.
Going, you were right.
Exactly.
You were right. You were right.
So, Aggies, if I can offer a silver lining, that's the one.
Yeah, this just has to, I mean, it was natural. And you saw the transition over the weekend where you saw Ross Bjork start to you know, do a round of calls and sort of, you know, like, hey, no revolt here. It's cool. But you have to kind of switch the message, because it's not a hard message to go with now, of just like, whatever, we'll kick their ass. You know what I mean? Like, just go with that and just embrace that for however long it takes for those two schools to join the SEC. They're in obviously a very confident position in football right now, that they feel like they are, you wouldn't even say ready to break through. They have broken through. So, like, just go with that.
And they're in a better position at just about every position. Yeah. They've recruited better.
Yeah.
Aggies have a better football program right now. They have a more proven coach. I mean, there's not much that Texas has on the Aggies right now. And, you know, recruiting might get a little bit harder, but you're still selling a better program that's done more in the last 10 years. You have a Heisman winner. You were on the precipice of the playoff last year. It's not like A&M has no sales pitch now that Texas is in the SEC. You still have some cards to play that are going to be effective.
Yeah, and I've been going with the analogy that it's like the older brother coming home at 22 and the 18-year-old brother has been lifting all the weights and has a sweet car now and is you know, is just a man now. But I think it's actually more like two people who went to middle school together and then went to different high schools. And the one who was cool in middle school is now transferring into the one who was a dork in middle school's high school. Except the guy who was a dork in middle school is now like the coolest guy in the high school, or is one of the cool kids. Like, gets to hang out at the lunch table with Alabama and Florida and Georgia and LSU. And so, like, Texas is going to be walking around with his tray, and A&M's going to be like, sup, bro? Meet Big Al. Meet Mike the Tiger.
I think some people
meet
are going to...
Meet Al the Gator.
I think Texas is definitely going to get some, like, O'Doyle rules, like people knocking over the tray, too, when they walk through that cafeteria.
That's Missouri. Missouri's just going to come skating by.
I've been torn through all this. I think I agree with our colleague Chris Vanini that college football lost a little bit of its soul, and this stuff kind of sucks. But man, the football is going to be good. Like, the football is going to be awesome. Like, it is going to be so good. And all the other philosophical things, I don't have to like it. A lot of people don't. I think, you know, if you're not a Texas or an Oklahoma fan, I think most fans are kind of like, man, like, this is not great. This is not what college football is. I think most fans feel that way, at least the ones I hear from. But man, Saturday at 3:30, Saturday night in the fall.
You're going to watch.
Golly, man.
About,
it's going to be
about
awesome.
Thanksgiving. That'll be fun, right?
Yes, yes. Ooh. It is going to be
here's
fun.
Here's the question. Is the Egg Bowl and Texas A&M Texas a doubleheader now? Or do you put one of those on Black Friday because the NFL... has tried to commandeer all of Thanksgiving.
Well, Egg Bowl would rather stay on Thanksgiving, right?
Sure. I mean, listen.
Yeah, I would think. I mean, so
the,
like,
the best
yeah,
time Texas- to pretend the best time to pretend to pee like a dog on the goalpost is after you've had a big turkey dinner.
Hey,
I've never gotten a sense from A&M or Texas that they have a ton of strong feelings about the day of the game. They always
Black
move
Friday,
me around.
I'm sure it would be fine.
Sometimes it was on Saturday. Sometimes it was on Thursday. I mean, the game's the game. Like, people are going to pay attention.
I'm going to be grateful. I'm going to be thankful for that when that happens. And I was joking on our other podcast, like, can we find a stadium for like 200,000 people for that first one? Because it's going to be insane, you know?
Is there a NASCAR track you can put it at?
Yeah, there is. Texas Motor Speedway in Fort Worth. Let's do it. Let's do it. I can't wait. We've already played one game at a NASCAR venue, although that one is a smaller NASCAR venue, the Bristol track. But Texas Motor Speedway is massive. And Max, how many people, legitimately, if they played it, how many people? I guess it would depend on the ticket price. But if you set it at like $20, do you think you could fill it? I think you could for the first
you
one.
Think
I have
there
to
would
say,
be kind of that you, third party
of
people.
$100 just, and fill it.
You would think that there'd be that third party of people who was like, I don't really care about either of them, but I want to see like the fights in the stands, and I want to see like just how. I mean, especially with if they're at like a similar level at that point in time too, then like it's just going to be an incredible game. You know,
yeah, that's true too. Good football.
You'd be like that ant just tackled that ant down there.
I can see their colors, kinda. Yeah.
Exactly.
It would be like one of like You'd the there wear... was a Texas OU game a couple years ago where like before the game even kicked off, like Mike Defee declared that there would be sportsmanship today. It would be one of those games you would need the pregame declaration that everyone has to play nice today.
I'm already about ready to run through a wall thinking about A&M and Texas because I covered the last game and it was one of the more memorable nights I've had covering this sport, and I it wasn't lost on me that night that, okay, this rivalry's ending, but I felt pretty confident that in my lifetime I would see it played again. I can't say that I thought in that moment that I'd see it played as a conference game again, but here we are.
It is truly amazing that this happened. I mean, and this is just because of a change in mentality from Texas. I was talking to Bowen Lofton, who was the president of Texas A&M when they moved to the SEC and then later served as a chancellor of Missouri. And he said in his conversations with Bill Powers, who was the longtime president of Texas, that the disdain for the SEC was obvious. So from the top down, Texas was very anti-SEC, did not relish the thought of playing there at all. But they're under new management now. Mm-hmm. You've had Board of Regents turnover. You've had all of that stuff. And at some point in the last few years, somebody at Texas goes, you know what? This is something we got to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I recall a distinct air of academic snobbery the last time around.
Yeah,
from
like
the
don't you think, Andy, there's part of that back then was like, there's just like, well, we kind of want to have it both ways, right? We want to be perceived, and it's a great academic school. Don't get me wrong, but we want to be perceived as we can be peers to Big Ten, Pac-12 folks, right? If we that's what's made them such a fascinating, you know, piece in all the future, you know, possible realignment. But I think at this point, the people driving the bus at Texas are just fed up. They just want to start winning football games again. You know, they want to be as dominant as possible in football again. And they've gone through a decade of seeing how rough it is when you're not.
And they want to be in the strongest league. You know, I know that the discussions were already happening when this happened, but when the Big 12 goes to the TV partners and says, can we reopen this thing, negotiate early, maybe do a deal early? And Fox and ESPN are like, nah. But meanwhile, at the same time, ESPN is throwing hundreds of millions of dollars at the SEC in the middle of a pandemic for a deal that does not end for four more years. Like, that tells you everything you need to know about where those leagues stand.
Money talks, as they say.
Well, and you know, if the TV networks were citing, you know, future uncertainty, maybe that's because, you know, Texas and OU were looking at the time too, and this was afoot.
It's entirely possible. Now, it's a chicken egg argument, but
sure.
The thing is, if the Big 12's a strong league, if the Big 10 says that to Fox, you know what Fox says? What time would you like to meet and which hotel? Like, sure. Let's do this.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll be at Fogo de Chao at 7 tomorrow.
Exactly. We will meet you at the Fogo de Chao right next to your headquarters. We'll be right there. We'll be right back after these words.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
Which little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Yeah, I think it's, if there's one thing that we've seen, is it's another reminder of the sort of the interesting like shadow leadership of college football, and that you have leadership, but like boosters hire coaches and TV networks decide what realignment's gonna look like. And that's, you know, I think we already knew that, but it's just interesting to see that play out every single time, because that's just how this sport works. There's leadership, and then there's the money. And there's the people with the money are the people that are you know, moving the chess pieces.
So speaking of the money, yeah. How do you guys, like, one of the next parts here is you know, all of the top lawyers in Texas and Oklahoma are licking their lips right now about getting a little slice of this fun little divorce negotiation. But what... You know, I feel like you see a lot of posturing on that. You're seeing that already from the Big 12 that, look, we are just going to straight up accuse you of having these conversations for quite a while at the SEC. I'm sure that, like, Texas probably, Andy, they're saying we'll stay through the whole contract. I'm sure they're probably also telling recruits, like, yeah, maybe we'll play there in 2022. Like, it's like there's...
It will definitely be a lot of talking out of both sides of your mouth.
Yep.
And I keep thinking, what's the logical conclusion of this?
Right.
And
I think that's what I was going to ask.
The only way 2022 happens is the Big 12 falls apart because other leagues take pieces of what's left of the Big 12, which we're going to talk about in a second. And otherwise, those teams would probably want to keep Texas and Oklahoma for as long as they can to hammer those checks. But the process of doing that will be so miserable after a few years that my guess is that they will name a number, Texas and Oklahoma will hit that number, and they will be free. So if I had to guess, if I were just betting, my guess would be 2023 with them paying a sizable chunk of money to their former conference mates.
Do you think they'll pay more than 80? Favorite,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you think they'd pay more than 80 to do it sooner?
No. Each?
Yeah.
Not a chance. No. No, I think it's going to be similar.
That's where it's like, yeah, we meet in the middle, but we also want to get out of here, you know?
Yeah. So Maryland's the good test case for this. Maryland said they wanted to leave the ACC, I believe, in September 2012. The exit fee was $52.2 million, and they negotiated that down to $31.9 million, something like that, and they began playing the Big Ten in 2014. So that seems... fairly like a pretty good benchmark there. Like, I would bet it's more than that they would wind up writing a check for.
Mm-hmm.
But these are two programs that, one, they'll get that back over the years in the SEC, but two, they have such big time donors that they could defray a lot of it by just saying, hey guys, we're going to pass the hat right now. Let's do this.
Oh, I'm not worried about where Texas and OU will find the money for this. That's not the case at all. But it's like there's kind of a weird predicament in all of this where as soon as Texas and Oklahoma are out the door, then the TV networks can call you and say, hey, it doesn't really make sense to pay 100% anymore, you know? And hopefully they're feeling...
No, I mean...
And not to mention you've got eight really pissed off members of your conference saying like, get as much money as you can. And also, the longer you keep them here, the longer we're getting this TV money. So it's mm-hmm. going to be like what sort of, obviously there will be a compromise, but what kind of compromise sort of satisfies all parties here, you know?
And I think if you're obviously, if you're Texas, no, you're rooting as hard as possible for the dissolution of the league as quickly as possible, because that is what opens the door to 2022 and, of course, lessens your financial responsibility. And, Andy, I feel like this is a perfect segue because there's a lot of paths for the Big 12 to dissolve.
Indeed. So the three of us had a story on The Athletic on Tuesday about what happens next for the eight who remain. And I think it's important that we first talk about Kansas State because we've made the Wildcats very mad. Every man is a Wildcat and every man is pissed.
Mm-hmm. Ema.
Well, Ema, we did them a favor because there's not any good news that we can tell them. Their best option is to be folded into that Pac-20 deal, which is problematic for a number of reasons, and I don't think that we'll see it, but that's what you can work toward. But outside of that, there is just not a good outcome for them.
Yeah,
they are very much in the
"we're all in this together" camp of saying, "Hey, either you go find some big bundle to go somewhere, or more realistically, probably for K-State, it's a question of, all right, can we just hold it together a little bit here? Talk about expansion, bring some people in, and just try and find some outcome where all of us are worth more together than we are by splitting up."
Yeah, and that's where this awkward dance is going to begin, because you have about half the league, Kansas, Iowa State. They're going to be eyeing the Big Ten. That's probably an outside
shot. West Virginia and the ACC.
You have West Virginia and the ACC, which I think is, I don't know that I would bet that happens, but I think it's probably trending in that direction. We'll see. It makes a lot of sense.
I wouldn't bet that would happen at all. If the ACC doesn't get Notre Dame to join as a football member, why would you do that? Why would you take money out of the other members' pockets? Because
I'll give you one far-reaching reason why you might do this.
Okay.
At some point, the ACC still kind of looks like the Big 12 in some ways, in that if you're the SEC and you decide, you know what, 16's fun, but what are Clemson's? What's Clemson doing? What's Florida State doing?
No. This is happening now.
Well, I know, but that's what I'm saying. You kind of, kind of.
But they are. They got a grant of rights through 2036.
Right.
If you add a member, Clemson or Florida State may be going, "Oh, we're changing membership. The grant of rights is no longer valid. Let's go to the SEC." So, perhaps. You better be damn sure you're making it worth everybody's while if you're in the ACC. If you're going to add members.
But to get back to the original point, they have some theoretical options that aren't pipe dreams. We'll say that. Everybody's going to be together publicly, and then you have some schools. You know, Oklahoma State's pretty strong in a lot of things, but doesn't have a gigantic audience. They're 20% of an already small state in Oklahoma. So the options are pretty limited, and for a few of those schools, Kansas State, Baylor, TCU, the best option is sticking together. And you're going to have this awkward dance for the schools that have to stay together, and then schools that might want to stay together unless something else comes along that's better. And that is going to be hilarious to watch.
I think another part of that that's difficult is, I think, so right now, no question, like the ADs and presidents of these Big 12 schools, the remaining ones, calling around, asking favors, asking everybody you can, hey, what can we do, right? It wouldn't be that surprising, guys, if the response is not right now. Now, maybe that doesn't mean you can ever get in. Maybe that means someday we're going to do a study and we're going to figure out, yeah, you add value to us. But I almost picture it like, if it is that kind of board meeting, do all those guys kind of walk back in together to a Big 12 meeting, kind of slumped heads saying, I couldn't go anywhere either. And then do you engage in that talk of, okay, stick together, fix the Big 12, or, you know, how do we kind of play this out in terms of a time thing? Because these leagues don't have to say yes to you here in the next week or month or year, you know?
It's almost like one of those packs of, like, high school friends that say, hey, you know, we're really good friends, we're about to go our separate ways, but hey, if neither one of us is married in 10 years, let's get hitched. But in the Big 12's case, it's like 9 months. Hey, if neither one of us is in a power conference in 9 months, let's just make one.
If you don't find a partner the rest of this year, do you want to be my partner at the end of this year? Yeah, that's what it is.
Here's the tricky part. The American is going to come in and throw increased shares at five of those schools. Mm. That is going to happen. And they're going to say no. Their initial response is going to be hell no. why in the world we leave the Big 12 for the American. And then time will pass and the Pac-12 won't call and the Big 10 won't call and the ACC won't call. And then what the hell do you do? Because you could right now probably take some of the Americans' teams and say, this is our league. This is what we're going to be. But you can't do that right now because Texas and Oklahoma will be like, well, you're moving on. Guess you don't need us or our money.
Well, and can you get eight people to collude like that and say, let's go after them, you know?
And I think
can you get everyone on the same page to say this is our mission?
Not immediately. Somebody's got to tell them no first.
Yeah. And it's worth revisiting at this point that I think fans and I think some administrators even are somewhat married to this idea of, oh, the AQ leagues, the P5 leagues. It's like, okay, like that doesn't matter. Well, how much money can you make? How much money is there? If there's a portion
without Texas and Oklahoma, you're not a power conference.
Yeah.
So this idea that
the Big 12 is going to have this, like that's not going to be a thing, especially in expanded playoffs. So, you know, if you go and you match up, you pair up with whatever schools you find advantageous in the American or whatever that looks like, and you form something else and you name it something else, you're just something new altogether. You're obviously not going to be a power conference. You might not be the dregs of college football, but you're something else entirely, a middle class, obviously, and you're not going to make as much, but there's a scenario you can make more than the disaster scenario.
Well, and the unknowable thing with this is like, okay, again, are the TV folks willing to pay more for mega AAC or are they willing to pay more for zombie Big 12? You know what I mean? Like it's what do you put together that has the optimal value? You know,
are they willing to pay the same? And that's where our friend Stuart Mandel comes in. So he had a really interesting story on Tuesday in The Athletic where he dug into the TV numbers for the games, which is what these TV guys are looking at. This is what matters to them. So the most watched Big 12 games from 2018 to 2019. This is, I believe, the 15 most watched games. Only two of them did not involve Oklahoma or Texas. One of those was Ohio State at TCU, which involved Ohio State, which is ratings gold every time they appear on television.
Great game, by the way.
And also, Urban was suspended for it, so it was like a little extra juicy one.
That was a very good game. Yeah. I remember
that's the one where Bosa got hurt.
Yeah.
So West Virginia at Oklahoma State in 2018, 3.9 million on ABC.
Good game. Good. Definitely is the last played a big role games. In deciding the conference title game appearance the that year. Yeah.
Yeah. The least watched of these games and is the only one on the list that doesn't involve Oklahoma, Texas, or Ohio State. So that's a problem. The bigger problem is the games involving Oklahoma and Texas. Oklahoma's average TV audience in 22 games in that period, 3.76 million. Texas is in 18 games during that period, 3.2 million. Everybody else in 59 games during that period, average audience, 886,000. Mm-hmm. This is a big difference.
And you can look, the counterpoint to that, you can say, okay, well, it's Texas and Oklahoma. They give them all the best time slots. But I think we all know the reality is if you're giving those other schools those slots, I don't think it's a big increase.
Yeah, it might be slightly better, but not much. I mean, there's a reason why Oklahoma and Texas, you're going to see them on primetime ABC, ESPN, and not noon on ESPN2.
They're not going to give you those time slots now that they're gone. They're just going to give them those time slots. Or let's say it's Fox, they're going to give USC or Oregon or Wisconsin or
that's
Penn
a good
State
point that there's
slots.
Not this untapped potential that well if you just put Oklahoma State West Virginia on ABC they'd get 8 million or whatever like that
right
that's just not gonna happen. It's not like West Virginia, there's 1.7 million people in their state. Oklahoma State, I think the split generally in the fan bases of an already pretty small state is like I think it's about 80-20, maybe 75-25. That might be a little bit tainted. You can't really scientifically hash that out, but I've lived in Oklahoma. That's about what I'd say it is.
Well, and the tough thing is like, okay, so during that time, Oklahoma is super dominant. During that, in between 18 and 19, Texas was back at some point, I believe. But in the new Big 12, if let's say TCU runs that league, right, and they're going 11-1. Are they still going to actually command that kind of attention? Yeah, it'll be better, but it's just whoever runs that next league, it's just not the same upside at all. And that's what's really tough in terms of figuring out what is the future value.
And it's just pure numbers. I think Texas, I believe the number when people were talking about TCU or kicking them around, I think Texas always, or pretty consistently, I don't know if this is true anymore, but they had more current students than TCU had living alums for a good portion of the time. And it's just pure numbers. If you're a school that's 5,000 to 8,000 students and you're Texas, which is what, max 60,000, 65,000, you'd know better than I would.
Right. And all the people hate watching Texas too.
Yeah, that's true too. People really hate Texas, and that's that's just a fact. And like, if you're that's still eyeballs, and those are eyeballs that you can sell to advertisers.
I'll correct myself. It was the 12 most watched Big 12 games. So West Virginia, Oklahoma State was number 12 in that 2 year period.
Mm-hmm.
It's and this is the thing. So one thing we talked about in the story, what about the possibility of the Pac-12 trying to plant a flag in Texas, in Oklahoma, in a football mad area of the country to help lend relevance to that West Coast group that feels very isolated if they don't do anything?
Well, I think it comes back to some of the same thing, like the same sorts of conversations. You know, Texas, they had a change of heart about the SEC. They decided this is the way things are going. We need this. Well, the Pac-12, they're not really best friends or philosophically aligned with Baylor and TCU and some of the other, like Oklahoma State, Texas Tech. The Pac-12 was very, like, philosophy and academics were very important to them. There's a reason why, you know, some of those other schools, the Baylor and TCUs and Kansas State, didn't get consideration in the Pac-16 that blew up. Do they have a change of heart when they realize, hey, we need good football? Listen, Oklahoma State's a good football program. Baylor, TCU, they're good football programs. They can mine talent. It's going to be a little tougher now, but they're still going to be good football. So that's the question that the Pac-12 has to answer. Do some of the university concerns that your president and your board are going to say, I don't love these guys, do they outweigh, well, but they can play some football and people are going to watch that? And that's what it's going to come down to.
We'll be right back after this message from one of our lovely sponsors.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Well, let me bring up another school, and this would be for the 8 who remain if they decide to stay together and maybe add some different schools. There is a big program out there that has its own TV deal, independent right now, mm-hmm. but a big audience, a big national audience that's, I mean, they sell out everywhere they go. I see Max shaking his head. Would the 8 who remain consider BYU?
You know, I think I'm just going by what I've been told over the past week. It sounds like that would still be a non-starter just based on some of the, you know, you remember back in 16, BYU did seem like a pretty viable candidate, and there was mm-hmm. pretty significant backlash from a lot of LGBTQ groups about the policies on that campus, the honor code they have there, and that hasn't changed in 5 years. Not really. They changed the language a little bit, but that's still the rule there. Now, I understand the counterpoint is like, well, what about Baylor? Right? I get that.
Right. Baylor's a Baptist school that a lot of the teachings are the same. So
correct. And Baylor's going to have some real challenges finding a Power Five partner, I think, for those reasons. But you're right, Andy. They've got the streaming. They've got the audience. Like, you know, I think you have to toss geography kind of out the window a little bit with this stuff for the Big 12. So I am curious to see if they engage in that possibility, because, you know, as we've said, I mean, there's not a lot of ideas you just automatically shoot down right now. And I honestly kind of feel that way about the Big 10 and Pac-12, where I've heard people tell me like, oh, I mean, you try and pitch a K-State or a Texas Tech to the presidents of Stanford and Cal, they'll laugh you out of the room. Or you could say that about the Big Ten. I don't really think people should, I think, appreciate the moment we're in right now and understand maybe we have a chance to level up here, and maybe we need to with what the SEC is doing.
The old rules don't necessarily apply. Mm-hmm. And people have made concessions as far as that goes before. I mean, I don't know that if you went to the ACC presidents in 2005 and pitched them Louisville, they would have said, oh, yeah, we're definitely going to have a team like Louisville. No, they just said, absolutely not. Well, they ended up taking him when they needed him. So
yeah,
things change. So in any of the if we're thinking things will go by the rules that have already been established, that's where you get hung up here. That's where you can make mistakes.
And I think that's a dangerous thing right now too, because I know a lot of I get it. All the fans of these eight Big 12 schools, they want they want an answer right now. They want instant gratification on here's where we're going, here's what our value is, all that kind of stuff. It's just going to take time. And I think we agree, Andy, like this is going to be a fluid deal. How these leagues feel about you as a school today may not be how they feel by the end of the year.
Yeah. There might be some hard truths learned, along the way. And we'll see. That's one thing too. I mean, you touched on it, Max, but the one thing that I don't think people are talking about enough of the Big 12 being caught flat-footed on this deal in the last—it's literally been less than a week, right? Yeah, or it's Tuesday. Yeah. This happened on Wednesday. It's been less than a week.
Six days since we.
Well, they've had 6 days to hash out contingency plans, and yeah, more information. Things can change in a hurry. It's been 6 days. It's not like people have been preparing for this for a long time, and that's I think an underrated part of the Big 12 being caught flat-footed and not knowing this was coming is that a lot of people don't know how they feel about what's going to be next, and those opinions are going to change in the weeks and months to come.
The other factor that we should consider, because we've seen this before, is somebody might just panic and do something rash.
We've never seen that before.
I've been in a few fantasy drafts in my lifetime, and I've seen that a lot, Andy.
Yeah. I mean, but this is on such a higher level, and obviously, you know, millions and millions of dollars at stake. But
I drafted Josh Allen last year and everyone laughed at me. And maybe it ends up being, you know, can you find that kind of value, you know?
Except it wasn't the quarterback of the Bills. It was the defensive end for the Jags. That's what the problem was.
I don't want to go too far down the rabbit hole, but this is a question that I have been kind of kicking around. Does Texas's entrance into the SEC for the future, does that end the precedence, the gentleman's agreement, or set a precedent and end the gentleman's agreement of the in-state stuff?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Because I think if Clemson and Florida State wanted to come right now,
yes,
the SEC would figure out a way to make that happen.
I think you're right. You're right.
So
yeah,
it's brands now. Brands are driving this. And if you listen to the podcast, like, you've heard me give this speech a bunch of times, but the last round of realignment was about acquiring territory, acquiring cable households, because you're either starting a cable network or you're trying to improve your cable network, and everybody in your footprint is going to have to pay, like in the SEC network started, everybody in the footprint is paying $1.30 a month. That's a lot of people and a lot of money. But now non-sports fans have figured out they don't have to pay for cable anymore, because most of your cable bill goes to live sport, paying for live sports. So they're not paying for it anymore. And that's a lot of money that just, boom, evaporated. So now you have to make sure you have brands people want, because the next round is direct-to-consumer sales, either ESPN selling direct-to-consumer or leagues themselves down the road selling direct-to-consumer. And you better have what everybody wants so that they pick your streaming service over Peacock and Amazon Prime. And well, Amazon Prime is a little different because two-day shipping. I mean, who can turn that down?
Gotcha.
But no, Netflix and Hulu and all of the other things, Disney Plus, whatever they're calling the CBS Paramount one, you have to differentiate yourself. And I would argue that, like, the new SEC, I was trying to figure out, where does the new SEC rank in Disney's portfolio? Obviously, Star Wars and Marvel are above it. I think the theme parks are probably above it post-pandemic once they get back rolling again.
Maybe.
I think
probably.
I think
I don't know enough I about their insight.
There's a lot of theme parks have a lot of money, but
yeah,
Monday Night Football is probably right there with it. But in terms of, if you said the only way to get the SEC is you pay $8 a month for the subscription service, I think a lot of people would, that's millions of people who would fork over $8 a month.
Mm-hmm. And then a bunch of people who might struggle to figure out how to get it to work on fall Saturdays, but they would try. So basically what you're saying, Andy,
ESPN Plus complaining is going to be at a record level. Yeah.
Although I was surprised there wasn't more of it last year, honestly. The first year we saw major conference games. But basically, Andy, what you're telling us is Netflix killed the Big 12.
Basically.
Yeah.
Wow. Disney Plus.
Yeah, but Netflix kind of started all this. I still remember to this day watching quote unquote instant, because I still had the mail in plan, and watching instant Netflix, watching The Office in like 2008 in college in the newsroom on a dinner break while I was doing a copy editing shift, and being like, wow, this is really cool that I can just get TV like on my computer, like on demand. That's, I bet nothing comes of this though. And here we are 13 years later, and college sports are, I don't even know what the right verb is, because it's not really imploding or disintegrating. It's just like, consolidating is a good word.
Remember how we all used to work for different companies, and now we all work for one.
Yeah.
Funny how that works.
I guess the cord cutters did get me. Now that you mention it, yeah. No, I was going to say it is kind of sadly ironic, Andy, that when we talk about that, like Bob Bowlsby was on the right side of history with this stuff too. You know. He. Mm-hmm. I would say their approach to saying, well, and of course, LHN was this obstacle that prevented a Big 12 network, obviously. But to say, hey, we're going to focus on streaming, mm-hmm. and we're going to let you have these third tier rights, and we're not going to be saddled with this unsuccessful network that if you ask the Pac-12 folks, they definitely wouldn't say do it the way we did it. I think they were on the right side. We thought this would come many years down the road and not today, you know?
Cable networks are also the reason the Big Ten and the SEC are so far ahead of everybody else right now. But it's also because they had something people wanted so bad that they were willing to yell and scream at their cable company about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, the SEC network was the most successful launch in cable television history. Why? Because people would threaten to burn down the cable company.
It wasn't that the SEC network did anything special. It's that they have people, a bunch of states that don't have pro sports. And I mean, I live in Tennessee. They have pro sports. Yeah. Tennessee runs the state. Like, you have a ton of states where they are the show in town. And that's what it is.
So, David, what you're trying to say is it simply is more significant in the minds of people. There's basically a shorter way to say that. It's just that the meaning of what they're doing and what they're playing
is just like the, if you were trying to put a value on the meaning of what they do in the SEC, it is probably
greater or larger than
what would be the general value of a meaning in another league traditionally.
The meaning is greater than. I got it.
Yes.
Perfect. Basically. Put it on a t-shirt.
It's like Texas and OU fans always say, it just means more. You know?
Max, quick question before we get out of here. Texas and OU got to run the Big 12. They got everything they wanted. They don't want to play Red River in primetime. Are we going to get a primetime Red River?
Ooh.
Mm-mm.
I think precedent
from the cocktail party wing over here.
I want it so bad. I know it's a bad idea, but I want it so bad.
No, because they played the cocktail party at night. It's dangerous. You don't want people drinking that much all day.
Yeah,
I'm with you on that. I don't disagree,
but I still want to see it once. I'm with you on that.
I think I have like another way of looking at it is like, can you guys watch Curb? I assume.
Yes.
A little bit.
Every once in a while.
Okay.
I saw the Dodger Stadium carpool lane one.
Can the Big 12 do like the Spite Store thing where they set up Oklahoma State and TCU playing at the state fair? and just sort of, oh, we already booked it. Good luck, guys. You know.
Do you know what the SEC would do if that happened? If they set up Oklahoma State and TCU at the state fair,
it would become the SEC prevents the Texas State Fair. They would just buy it.
No, the SEC would put Oklahoma and Texas at the Motor Speedway. The same.
Oh man, one time. Sure. I'd like to see that.
Yeah, I'm with you, and I would like to see. A primetime one time would be great.
I don't want it to be habitual.
We've all been to the state fair on a Friday night too, so like you could see, like it would be challenging. I would say
parking would be challenging. The police log the next day. That's what I want.
Some bad ideas are worth doing. That's all I'm saying.
This is
what if we
terrible,
just did it and became
idea.
Legends? You know, that's just what you do.
I don't disagree.
I'm pretty sure that's what Greg Sankey said in his office at some point in the last year.
Yes, he did.
Oh, man. What a time. What a time.
It is a time. It is a crazy time to be alive in the world of college sports. Please keep your phones on because I'll be bothering you a lot. We're going to keep talking realignment until there's no more realignment to talk. We will talk about football eventually, I promise. But just not today. We'll talk to you later.